Lee has more on what other politicians are saying.
The Constitution provides the right to peaceably assemble. But I think in this instance, I would discourage Americans from engaging in protests if, in fact, the former president is indicted.
While former Vice President Mike Pence urges protesters to stay home, other top Republicans are coming to Trump's defense. Senator Rand Paul even tweeting, the Manhattan District Attorney should be put in jail.
The Federal Reserve today expected to go ahead with another interest rate increase of a quarter of a percentage point despite the recent banking turmoil. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and the CEO of Norfolk Southern both set to testify today before a Senate panel focused on rail safety. This follows the toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. This is ABC News. Surveillance video shows the death of a black man in custody of sheriff's deputies in Virginia.
Choice words from Caroline Uko, the mother of 28-year-old Ivo Otino, who died in the custody of sheriff's deputies in Virginia.
They are monsters. They are animals.
Otino was brought into the admissions room at Central State Psychiatric Hospital March 6th, wrestled to the floor, pinned down until he stopped moving. CPR and a defibrillator administered, but still Otino, who had mental health issues already, was pronounced dead.
He was handcuffed. He had leg irons on, and he was face down.
Civil rights attorney Ben Crump joining the family and calling for a Justice Department investigation. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
The head of Mexico's nature reserve says frost and extreme temperatures in the U.S. may be some reasons why the number of monarch butterflies who spent the winter in the mountains of central Mexico fell by 22%. And less than 3 months after saying she had throat and breast cancer, tennis legend Martina Navratilova says she's cancer-free. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at LLS.org.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1. On Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA life insurance.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers. Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are rolling through today's show. Coming up at the half hour of this hour... we're going to be talking about the Milwaukee Zoo and their hiring and some of their egg day and such. And then at 1 p.m., Representative Mark Pocan will be here, and we will find out if he is indeed the funniest politician in Wisconsin, like we were promised. We'll also talk about Medicare Advantage and why it's a sneaky name.
Yeah.
It's a little more serious. to get started, this segment, it's been about over a month. It's been like a month and a half since the train derailment in Ohio, which we've talked to John Russell a lot about. And I think it made a lot of us more aware of the train tracks
Absolutely.
That we pass and the trains that go by us and if those could potentially derail. But, you know, it caused, I think, leaders and community members across the country in different areas to be more vigilant about what happens when there's toxic spills. Not everyone.
No, shockingly, not everyone.
Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC, the largest business lobbyist firm
group,
is they're currently suing the state over something called the Spills Law, which is an environmental public health protection that's been on the books since 1978. So here to talk more about what that law is and what it protects and what the lawsuit is Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Well, good afternoon, Kristen and Jane. Thanks so much for having me.
We're so excited to have you. So
yeah,
I guess let's start at the beginning. And what is the Spills Law?
Yeah, a great question. I think a lot of people around the state probably aren't aware of our state's spills law, right? Because it's kind of been humming along in the background, as you say, since 1978 and doing what it's supposed to do, right? A lot of times when you hear about things, it's when things go wrong, like what happened in Ohio. But certainly it has been operating since 1978. And is a bedrock environmental law requiring people, businesses, other entities responsible for discharging toxic or hazardous substances into the environment to first report it to our state Department of Natural Resources, and then, of course, clean it up. Right now, there's a whole lot more to it than that. So I might just give you some broad strokes to help set us up for further discussion here as we start talking about the case. But you'll see when we talk about the case, the issue really revolves around the definition of hazardous substance in the spills law. And the legislature way back in 1978 defined that really broadly to make sure that it encompassed any substance that might pose a threat to public health or the environment when discharged based on maybe the characteristics of that substance, maybe the concentration or the volume at which it's discharged, and of course the site-specific characteristics of where the discharge occurs. All of those things could factor in, right? And it sort of makes sense when you look at the commands of the law itself, right? It requires the responsible party, right, of a spill of a substance, again, that might pose a threat to public health or the environment, to notify DNR. DNR will take a look at that notification, probably make a preliminary determination as to whether or not an actual threat exists, right? And then we'll issue, if a threat does exist, right, what's called a responsible party letter. Hey, person, you're responsible for this spill, right? Now, if there's an emergency or something like that, DNR can also issue emergency orders or take action of itself. But if there is no threat, then no further action is required, you know? So it's this whole idea that if it may pose a threat, right? So it's not even that it is like currently threatening. It is a way to notify DNR of potential threats so that they can triage those, right? Determine what are actually threats, prioritize, and do all of that. But if there is no threat, say you spill a little bit or even, you know, half a gallon of gas at the gas pump and you report that to DNR, well, guess what? It's on an impermeable surface that can be kind of cleaned up and the rest is likely to evaporate. Not much of a threat there, right? And no need to go through the rest of the process. But so there's situations where it could even pose a threat in the short term, but not in the long term, and doesn't require that. But if DNR issues a responsible party letter, then that party is supposed to conduct a site investigation to determine the full scope of contamination, both on and around the property where the spill occurred. And then they identify different options for cleaning that up and identify their preferred option. And DNR will ultimately approve that. If they execute it properly, they can close the case. But importantly, the goal of remediation under the spills law is not to make it like the spill never happened, right? Mm-hmm. Because that would basically be impossible for responsible parties to do in many situations. It's simply to restore the environment to the extent practicable and to minimize the harmful effects of a discharge, not only on the environment, but the surrounding public. So, you know, this process takes years, and it can certainly put significant costs off on responsible parties. But the whole point of the spills law is to ensure that those responsible are bearing the costs of cleanup and not the general public or municipalities who often can't afford to clean it up, which means that we just have these brownfields around the state, right? And creates an even bigger issue, not only with the human health stuff, but think loss of property tax revenue, for example. It exacerbates, and it's a big problem. So the spills law is fundamental, right? But as I say, it's been running just fine for almost 45 years now, until this recent assault on it by WMC.
By WMC. So we're talking to Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates, about the spills law, which we just, you did, that was a really good explanation of it. And so now let's move into why it's something, you know, it's something that a lot of us, if we don't work in environmental anything, had not heard of, because like you said, it's been just humming along, existing, protecting us where needed. But now it is in the news because there is a lawsuit brought by WMC trying to undermine its effectiveness, as far as I understand it. So can you give us a little bit more background on the lawsuit, where it is, and like where it is in the process right now?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start just with what the lawsuit is about, right? And so basically, we see WMC, just to put it in a nutshell there, they're trying to gut the spills law with a procedural argument. They're saying that for DNR to determine that a substance is a hazardous substance, right, that a substance qualifies under that definition, which can depend on all sorts of factors, right, that in order to interpret a substance as qualifying as a hazardous substance, that DNR needs to go through the administrative rulemaking process to do that and create a list, not only identifying those substances, but like the concentrations at which those substances are considered hazardous, right? And so we actually argue that the process that WMC is arguing for, right? Oh, we need this process so people know what's going on here. Well, there was a process, and it was 45 years ago in front mm-hmm. of the Wisconsin legislature when it enacted this law, right? And specifically chose not to require rulemaking or a list, right? And so our response to that is, right, is if you want to rewrite this bill's law, fine, but the appropriate place to do that is in front of the legislature, mm-hmm. right? Using that same process, not through the courts or trying to force this determination into the rulemaking process that the legislature clearly didn't want. But, just to get a little bit more specifically, right, DNR is using PFAS, or excuse me, WMC is using PFAS. So an emerging contaminant called per- and polyfluoral alkyl substances that people are really, I think, just starting to become aware of in earnest in the last few years. Highly toxic, yes, useful, but highly toxic, and we're finding them everywhere. Well, DNR has been using the spills law to regulate that because the spills law has been the only regulatory hook that we've had for several years, yeah. Right? Until we got some standards on the books late last year, right? But we see WMC using PFAS, right? Oh, here's this new substance that always qualified as a hazardous substance. We just didn't know it, right? And sees DNR applying it there. So they're not only arguing that they need to go through the rulemaking process for PFAS, but for all substances they regulate under hazardous substances. So they did win that argument before the Waukesha Circuit Court. But fortunately, and we argued there in favor of, the court did stay that decision. So the spills law is still in effect right now, and DNR is able to implement it. But the state appealed that decision up to the Court of Appeals, like I say, and that decision has currently been briefed and is pending an assignment to a 3-panel judge. And we'll see if they prefer to issue a decision or perhaps send it straight to the Supreme Court, right, for certification. So that's where it is right now, and that's sort of the claims of the case in a nutshell.
And so when we come back from break, Rob Lee will still be here because I further clarifications, because I think what you just said about PFAS, which is, you know, it's become it feels like almost everyone knows what it is, right, because there's both nationally and in Wisconsin, it's everywhere, it's in almost everything, it's so bad for us. But I would love to dig in a little bit deeper about the rules process, because I'm a little cloudy there as far as what this would actually change and the burden that it would create. But then also just talking about kind of in the legal system, because one thing I don't want to lose sight of, and I know we're not going to get into it too deeply as far as how this also matters to the Wisconsin Supreme Court races as far as environmental cases that do go in front of them that sometimes we lose sight of with all the other cases that we're talking about in this election cycle. So when we come back, Rob Lee, staff attorney at the Midwest Environmental Advocates, will still be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project,
transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake?
No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development?
Nuh-uh.
You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
But can't you see I'm calling? A guy like you. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are talking to Rob Lee, who is a staff attorney at Midwest Environmental Advocates, about the spills law in Wisconsin. And it's getting challenged by a WMC lawsuit. And just wanted to follow up so I understand. So what the lawsuit is over is basically trying to argue that the DNR would have to make a list. So it basically puts an additional burden on the DNR to make a list of criteria of what is considered hazardous. And so it's basically limiting how efficiently and quickly they could address a spill or a, you know, toxic like PFAS or something like that. Is that what you were saying?
Sort of. So the definition of hazardous substance in the spills law already sets forth the criteria,
Okay. Right?
And that's sort of the point, right? Like it either fits it or it doesn't, right? For that, what they want is for DNR to go through the rulemaking process, a process that can take up to 3 years, right? And promulgate a list of substances that fit that criteria. And to identify, in some instances, the concentration at which those substances rise to the level, right? The problem with that is basically how difficult it is to go through the rulemaking process, and it become increasingly more difficult in recent years, thanks to our legislature, right? Mm-hmm. Putting burdens in place to make it basically impossible, right, for DNR to ever be able to recreate its authority under the spills law, the authority it has right now through the rulemaking process, right? They would have to do it piecemeal. It would take forever. There's no guarantee of success. And they would have to anticipate every possible hazardous substance discharge out there. It's impossible. They would never get the flexibility that they enjoy right now, right? One of the purposes of the spills law, they would basically never get it back.
Well, go ahead.
Rob, a texter from the 414 has a comment at 844-967-2789. It appears that this lawsuit by the WMC challenging the spills law, or just to put it another way, the WMC may be asking that businesses have the right to spill without any cost or repercussions. And that's certainly the way that I read it. And I wanted to ask you, so who's the latest one in Wisconsin who spilled something?
Well, if you went and looked at that, right, I mean, there are over there are thousands of active spill sites right now. And I think over its lifetime, the spills laws led to the remediation and closure of something like 30,000 sites, right? So whatever the most recent one is, I don't know right off the top of my head. But certainly we see big discharges all of the time, right? I think one of the biggest ones in the PFAS realm, right, are what we see up around Tyco, fire products in Marinette and Peshtigo. That's a pretty salient one. And members from that community are part of our client group there. Same thing over in La Crosse in the French Island area. And individuals are members of the organizations that are part of our client group there. Wausau, Madison, Milwaukee, Rhineland, like the communities throughout the state with PFAS contamination abound, and we're only finding more. So it's pretty scary out there, right? And if successful, this lawsuit would seriously hamstring DNR's ability to help these communities in a variety of ways, from simply providing bottled water and interrupting exposure pathways, to substances that are so toxic, we're talking about a drop in like 40 Olympic-sized swimming pools, if not even more toxic, right? Interrupting that exposure pathway, identifying these responsible parties, and requiring them to clean it up, right? So they can go back and use their wells or just feel comfortable playing in the creek or whatever it is, right? So, but that other point about businesses not like, don't have to pay to clean it up. I think that's right in the short term. But I think part of the problem with this lawsuit is that it's short-sighted, right? Certainly it could get them out of liability in the near term, maybe under the spills law, but that contamination is likely to remain and their liability for it may still remain. And all they're doing is building up more risk. What happens when the EPA comes in and starts over-promulgating and regulating these sites? Do they think it's going to be a windfall then, right? Because it's likely going to cost more. And guess who's not going to have to pay for that? WMC. It'll be the businesses, their members, and those people, right, who are already probably trying to figure it out anyway, right? And they're just putting them, they're just kicking it further down the road. But I don't think this will ultimately allow them to escape. I think it's just going to hurt more.
Absolutely. Well, with the 2 minutes we have left, I guess, knowing that this is in the courts, it's getting appealed, it could end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, TBD on when that would happen. But as far as for the average person who is not involved in the lawsuit, is there a call to action or anything that people can be aware of, something that they can do in the meantime?
Well, I think, right, we are participating as friends of the court at the court level, right? And, you know, we're putting all the arguments there. But one aspect of this case, too, right, is to raise the alarm about what WMC is up here in this deregulatory effort trying to gut the spills law. And certainly they can be tried in the court of public opinion as well, right? And it matters where people and businesses spend their dollars. That's where WMC gets their power. And so people just need to educate themselves and think critically about that. I think it's super important, but that's something they can do right now, a change that they can make in their life, right? And this isn't the only issue, right, that WMC is on the wrong side of. So,
no, really? Rob Lee said it first. No, that is certainly true. And again, this is something that it's complicated, but I think seeing what happened in Ohio raises an alarm of how that is such on a extreme level of how badly things can go, but even more important to keep the laws that are protecting us from hazardous material in place. So Rob Lee, thank you so much for joining us today. We will link all that information to our show notes. But thank you for joining us. Good luck in the lawsuit.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
All right. When we come back, we will be talking to Jenny Dilberti from Milwaukee.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Security is being ramped up in Lower Manhattan ahead of a possible indictment of former President Trump in connection to payments allegedly made to adult actress Stormy Daniels in 2016. ABC's Jacqueline Lee has more on what other politicians are saying.
The Constitution provides the right to peaceably assemble. But I think in this instance, I would discourage Americans from engaging in protests if, in fact, the former president is indicted.
While former Vice President Mike Pence urges protesters to stay home, other top Republicans are coming to Trump's defense. Senator Rand Paul even tweeting, the Manhattan District Attorney should be put in jail.
The Federal Reserve today expected to go ahead with another interest rate increase of a quarter of a percentage point despite the recent banking turmoil. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and the CEO of Norfolk Southern both set to testify today before a Senate panel focused on rail safety. This follows the toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. This is ABC News.
Dear Hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. We were just, for the last segment, joined by Paul Noonan. We were talking about Aaron Rodgers and what his future holds for his Green Bay Packers. Sounds like he's headed to the New York Jets. Sounds like something happened in his darkness retreat where something changed. But we're going to be continuing our series of conversations today about mayoral elections happening around the state and around the region. We talked to Dr. Kristen Lyerly in our first hour of the show about the mayor's race happening in Green Bay. And we are joined for our next segment by Scott Gordon, the publisher of Tone Madison, to talk a little bit about the race for mayor in Madison. Scott, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
So there's a lot of attention paid to the top of the ticket in the spring election, with the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. But there is a lot going on down ballot in a lot of different communities across the state. One of those communities is Madison, where there is a race for mayor. So since I've been paying so much attention to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, paying attention to a number of other stories happening in Milwaukee, I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to what's been happening in these mayor's races. So Kristen was able to give me the lowdown about what's happening in Green Bay in our first segment. So what's been happening with the race for mayor in Madison?
So our incumbent mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway, who was first elected in 2019, has a challenger named Gloria Reyes, who has served on the Madison School Board and was deputy mayor under Paul Soglin, and also, like, earlier in her career was a police officer. And it is an interesting race, and it's gotten kind of weird at a lot of turns. There were a couple other folks in the primary who weren't, you know, didn't come off as super serious. And it's been interesting to me that this is what the field's come down to and that no one's running really to Satya's left. I think there's a lot of ways you could break it down, but I think the really interesting thing to me is how much this mayor's race grows out of all the conflict that's been happening in Madison recently over transit and housing and density. You know, a big part of the, you know, agenda that Satya ran on in 2019 was making progress on some transit projects, including bus rapid transit. And the city has broken ground on construction for some of the bus rapid transit lines. And for those who aren't like constantly thinking about bus rapid transit, it's a system where the bus has a dedicated lane and kind of expedited boarding and loading and stuff.
Higher frequency, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a really promising development, and there've been a bunch of contentious turns in this debate. Especially over 2021 and 22, there was this huge blow up about the proposal of routing buses down State Street, which is the logical thing to do if you need to get from east to west on, you know, the isthmus of Madison. There just aren't a lot of, if you look at a map, there aren't that many ways to really do that well. And a bunch of like business owners and folks got together and kind of threw a tantrum over that, and were trying to delay it and trying to get the buses routed off of State Street. The Wisconsin State Journal ran approximately a million editorials calling for State Street to become a grand pedestrian promenade. And the way it is now, and the way that it'll probably kind of still be after bus rapid transit comes in, is that there will be transit and also still a lot of pedestrian friendly space, and those two things aren't at odds with each other. But the city ended up sticking with that routing, and it, you know, upset a lot of people. And it definitely struck me as kind of a tantrum on behalf of like certain business interests in Madison. You know, I don't know if it was really about the buses per se, so much as, you know, as so much as some folks kind of saying like, hey, you have to listen to us, and if we're not getting our way and we don't feel like we're being heard enough, then we're going to pitch a fit. We've also had a couple of really recent changes to zoning that are intended to basically encourage density, encourage more affordable housing. The housing market in Madison is really bad right now. You know, if you're searching for an apartment here, the rents are getting ridiculous. It's very hard to find, you know, a decent place in, yeah.
Anyone you
know,
talk to
anywhere
in Madison who's looking to buy a house is having a hard time.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so everybody, I think, realizes that the city badly needs to add a lot more housing units because things are very tight, and
it's the fastest growing part of the state. Yeah.
Yeah. And that creates a whole other interesting dynamic where obviously you have people in single family home neighborhoods often, you know, pushing back against these kinds of things and saying, well, this is going to like screw up the character of our neighborhood. And there's all kinds of kind of ugliness under the surface there that is, I think, pretty obvious to see. There was the Let me back up. So two big zoning things recently. One was transit-oriented development, which basically is a way of allowing denser development within a certain radius of the bus rapid transit lines that we're building. And then there was a change to the way that the city defines family and how many unrelated people basically can live together in a housing unit. And the idea behind changing that and loosening those restrictions was to make it easier for, you know, multiple people, even if they're not related, to, you know, split the rent on an apartment or a house together. And there's been a lot of blowback, but I think it's been interesting to see some sane things prevail after what has largely been a few very frustrating years with our leadership and with our Common Council.
So some fraught debates over the years with transit, with housing, and, you know, kind of entering into this mayor's race in Madison between Satcher Rhodes Conway, the incumbent mayor, and Gloria Reyes, who was the challenger who emerged from the primary. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit in our earlier segment with Kristen talking about the race for mayor in Green Bay. But I think that it's really interesting how, you know, some of these races can be, you know, your typical partisan left right of a Republican Democrat type of race for mayor. But in other cases, not so much. And I think, you know, and I think I'd rather these races, you know, just from somebody who doesn't like the, you know, just the kind of typical right left arguments of these things to get to a place of some sort of nonpartisan debate. And whether it's about transit, whether it's about housing, you know, I think it's interesting how those issues can be not your typical partisan issues, but are so important when you get down to the local level. And so what if some of the, you know, you sent me a story the other day about a debate happening between these two candidates and the kind of the way that the race is taking shape here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because, of course, you know, both of these candidates are Democrats and both of them present themselves as progressive. And in the political landscape of Madison, you know, almost everybody wants to be considered a progressive, and people kind of throw that around so loosely that that it kind of loses a lot of its definition and gets a bit ridiculous. I think some of the housing and transit stuff that I'm talking about, and of course some of the debates over policing and so forth, have really brought out a just how much of a conservative streak there is in Madison. And of course, we're always talking here about how we have this self-image as a progressive city that really doesn't hold up against a lot of the conditions that we've created for people and a lot of the policies that that we live under here. But it really has brought out, I mean, I don't think it's like extreme to say that it's brought out this very pronounced like reactionary streak in a lot of Madison. When we were kind of following, you know, some Common Council meetings where they were debating these zoning changes, there were people really, you know, piling into public comment. A lot of them were arguing very eloquently for these zoning changes and like really came prepared and made thoughtful arguments. And then a lot of the people against, I think because they're so used to having their way as single family homeowners and as, you know, people who tend to be more likely to be white and more likely to have some money, I think they didn't like really bother to like come prepared with something, with anything thoughtful or substantive. And there were lots of things about, you know, this ruining single family neighborhoods and college students are going to like invade the neighborhood and screw everything up. And it just, there was a real asymmetry in the debate between like how hard one side was trying and how much the other was just not. And kind of there was a lot of like disingenuousness and exaggeration and hyperbole coming from the sort of anti-density, if you want to call it, side. And some really outlandish moments, honestly, in the public comment, which, I mean, it's nothing new if you watch a lot of government meetings and stuff, but like there are people who literally would say things like, may God protect our right to live in single family homes, things like that. I mean, you know, just framing this clear need that we have to house more people here and to get housing costs down so that people can afford to live here, framing that as just this kind of ridiculous, like, of attack on Old Glory and God or whatever. Like, it was nuts. I mean, people were freaking out about, like, oh God, there's going to be duplexes in my neighborhood now. These are incremental changes. They're nowhere near what is needed, but it's kind of the curse of Madison that we get, like, a little bit of the nice progressive things, and then this reaction that casts that as you know, extreme.
Yeah, it seems just like a very reactionary type of response to, you know, the realities of the challenges that Madison is facing with needing to build more housing, build more transit, house more people, keep housing costs down. You know, it reminded me, I lived in Seattle for a little while. It reminds me a lot of the type of debates that I would follow in Seattle, because they, you know, throughout the 2010s, a very fast growing city, Amazon grew exponentially. They've moved their headquarters downtown. They built all these new apartments and stuff like that. But there were all sorts of debates about, you know, keep preserving the integrity of the communities and keeping these single family housing. Well, at the same time, you have a growing homelessness crisis and a housing cost crisis and all these different things. And you think of these cities like a Madison or a Seattle as these progressive bastions. But when you get actually down to where the rubber meets the road, and a lot of these situations, you know, the debates can be very reactionary. Can kind of. You know, veer into the territory that is kind of, you know, more of a conservative type of viewpoint when you really get down to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we could spend a lot more time than we have here talking about, like, the way that these arguments get distorted. I have my issues with Sacha, and I wish that there were people challenging her who I felt were, like, doing something serious and substantive. And I'm sure, like, Gloria Reyes is capable of running a serious and substantive campaign, but it really, she just hasn't. And she very much comes off as just sort of like the candidate of cops and NIMBYs who want to push back on, you know, on some minor change. And the fact that, like, Sacha has at least stuck to her guns on some of these things and shown, you know, some serious commitments and some serious thought about policy matters. See, I mean, that counts for a lot, even with all the drawbacks.
You've been listening to our conversation with Scott Gordon from the publisher of Tone Madison. We've been talking about the race for mayor in Madison. Very important race. We'll continue to follow Tone Madison's coverage of that and all sorts of different things on your website. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today on As Goes Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about some headlines when we get back after the break. And in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by Justin Warland of Time Magazine, who is giving a talk in Milwaukee later this week about the Inflation Reduction Act. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate you.
We'll be right back.
It's 41 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are rounding out the lunch hour of our Tuesday show.
I just want to share, we just had a caller. And you can check in anytime at 844-967-2789. We did address with Jenny Deliberti from the zoo about the loss of Gordy, the groundhog.
Yeah.
And this nice man wanted to know what happened to Gordy. I don't believe it was suspicious circumstances surrounding Gordy's death. But unfortunately, he called right after we cut Jenny loose. So I told him to call the zoo. I'm sure someone at the zoo can
I'm sure
him.
Someone at the zoo. I think Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did write an article on March 9th when it happened. But I'm sure it was old age.
I don't know that groundhogs, I mean, do they live more than 5 years? That seems like a long time.
Here we go. In an announcement, the zoo said that Gordy had been acting lethargic and wasn't interested in eating.
Oh, that's never
zoo
good.
Zoo medical staff found that there was fluid around Gordy's lungs and determined that it was likely the result of a cancerous tumor that had ruptured.
Oh.
Poor guy.
Well, now we know.
Now we know.
And rest R.I.P. Gordy.
Poor Gordy.
He's in a better place.
Yeah. Now we have to see who his successor will be and if they will, you know, what name they will give him. It's a good, they should have a naming competition if there's a new baby.
Oh, they
groundhog.
Do. Oh yeah. They're big on naming
contests.
Yeah. It's really fun. We were so lucky to have our zoo.
I know that makes me want to go. Like whenever Jennifer's on, I feel like it's like my motivation to have a zoo day, because I have not been back to the Milwaukee County Zoo since I moved back to Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, mm-hmm. There's a bucket list.
Bucket list. Take our niece.
Another thing for
the
list.
Fun day at the zoo. We'll maybe wait till it's a little bit warmer.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So on this day in 2006, Jack Dorsey sent out the first ever tweet.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That both feels like not long enough ago, but also very long.
A long time ago.
So do you have any idea what his first tweet was?
Is this working?
Close.
Really?
It says, just setting up my Twitter, but Twitter didn't have any vowels. It was just T-W-T-T-R.
Twitter didn't have any vowels when it
started? No, he just spelled Twitter without vowels.
Oh, okay.
So just setting up my Twitter. And that was the first tweet ever by Mr. Jack Dorsey. And look at it now.
Yeah, look at it now.
And so I thought we would do some Twitter trivia that I stole from Morning Brew. But let's see, Jane, if you can, and you can play along at home if you would like to text. We probably can't take your calls fast enough because Jane's also playing. But 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY if you want to text your answers in or comment on the live stream. If you can remember who tweeted each tweet.
All right. This is intriguing.
All right. So number one. Next, I'm buying Coca-Cola to put the cocaine back in it.
Oh, that's Elon.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one. Number two. This is what happens when you don't recycle your pizza boxes.
Oh, Greta.
That was
Greta Thunberg.
That was Greta Thunberg in response to Andrew Tate after he had tried to troll her with his Bugattis.
Yeah.
And she said, email me at smalldickenergy.whatever. And then he got arrested. and I'm pretty sure he's still in jail.
He is still in jail.
In Romania. In Romania.
Well, I'm sure the Romanian jails are lovely this time of year.
And that was her response because he had had some kind of follow-up video to her response where he had a Romanian pizza. There was all the idea that he had outed himself because he had ordered from this Romanian pizza.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty. That was a beautiful moment on Twitter.
All right, number three. We did it at Joe Biden.
Oh, Kamala.
That was Kamala. I didn't realize she tweeted it. Obviously, there's the video of her saying it.
Yep.
We did it, Joe.
Yep.
We did it.
After she was out for a run, I think.
I think so. She was doing something. All right, number four, you're crushing it so far.
Thanks.
Look at your pop culture knowledge, Jane Madnair.
I'm full of useless things.
All right, number four. Hey, guys, want to feel old? I'm 40. You're welcome.
Macaulay Culkin.
God, I would not have guessed that one. You got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Macaulay Culkin.
Wow. Because he's the Home Alone kid.
He's the Home Alone kid. So I don't know. I don't know if this is this last year or a couple years ago.
He's 40 years old.
I should also say these are all among the top 30 most liked tweets ever.
Oh.
So that's why they've
jumped to the
top. I think they were news-making tweets in and of themselves. They aren't just totally arbitrary.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're going to get this last one. I would not have gotten this last one. But it just says, love you, purple heart emoji. And you is spelled with just the letter.
Just the letter. Love you. So it's Prince-related.
Is it?
It's purple.
I don't know. It just says purple. It's just a purple heart.
Can you give me a hint?
It's a member of a boy band.
Justin Timberlake.
No. Yeah, you're not going to get this one. Okay. I would not get this one either. It's J-Hope of BTS.
Okay, never heard of him.
The Korean boy, like, superstar.
I know the band, yeah.
I've heard of BTS. If you held a gun to my head, I could not tell you. But now I can. Now I know one of them is named J-Hope. But prior to that, I could not have told you a single one of their names.
And there's a bunch. I mean, aren't there like seven of them?
I think they broke up, too.
Oh.
I think they're all doing like individual records. I think
solo
I
feel projects. Like
that is a group that only slips into my consciousness through
side
reading
channels.
Of the news in general. This is not information that I seek out when it comes across. Like, oh, let's go down. I've never gone down a BTS rabbit hole. Let's put it that way. But you crushed it. 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
That's pretty good.
That's not too bad. I'm pretty happy with myself.
Yeah. So for better or for worse, on this day.
Momentous.
Would that be 17 years ago?
Wow.
Jack Dorsey gave us Twitter. But I would say overall it has been a good... I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, I think tomorrow... we were going to talk about today and then we bumped it. But maybe with Greg tomorrow, we'll talk about... You know, there's an increasing push on banning children, like 16 and younger, from being on social media at all.
Right.
There's a bill that's been proposed. There's lawsuits... And there's multiple different lawsuits. I don't know how you would go about doing that, especially as we talk about, you know, I've publicly lamented that I do not want TikTok to be banned. I've publicly lamented that I feel like it sucks that Twitter doesn't feel like I can't put my finger on why, but it just doesn't feel as good since Elon took it over. And so, like, I like social media. I rely on it. I also understand that it probably isn't always
healthiest.
The best on my mental health. But we're going to have that debate tomorrow as far as what should we do with kids when it comes to social media. But yeah, 17 years we've had this little bird app.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for the memories, Jack. All right, when we come back, Representative Mark Pocan will be here. We're going to have some fun with him, but also talk about the serious topic of why Medicare Advantage is a scam and we should change the name. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Tom Rivers. The Federal Reserve, the nation's central bank,